Welcome to the Global Tech Leaders Podcast, where we help business leaders and individual contributors with actionable insights to hit their number and figure out the nuances of truly operating a business globally today, squeezing the essence of the lessons learned from the planet's top tech leaders. This is your guide to joining the fast track to global market scaling.
So today we are joined by Alan McGlinchey, VP of Emerging Growth Companies at the IDA, Everything European Expansion. I've had the IDA mentioned on every other podcast we seem to have done so far. So I thought, why wouldn't we engage these guys and have them tell the story about what they do? So welcome to today's show, Alan. Thank you very much for joining us.
Thank you, Ross. Delighted to be here.
Excellent. Well, look, let's kick off from the top. Can you just tell us, for our listeners, a bit about who the IDA are and what do they do?
Sure. I suppose to give some context to international listeners, IDA Ireland is the Irish government's inward investment agency. And our objective is to work with international companies and help them set up operations in Ireland to serve international markets. So, you know, I suppose from a US perspective, we partner with US multinationals and help them set up teams in Ireland that support the European and EMEA regions.
Okay, okay. And I noticed you're located out on the West Coast. So what role does the IDA West Coast play in this setup?
Sure, yeah, I suppose, look, the West Coast team has, first of all, we've had offices here on the West Coast for about 40 years, working with international companies. Early on, companies like Apple, you know, Intel, you know, Microsoft and folks like that who'd be out here who would have set up teams a long time ago in Ireland. So we have a number of executives based here in Mountain View in California. I'm based in San Francisco. We have an office in Seattle and we have folks down in Irvine. And our role is to really, I suppose, twofold, work with our existing client base to help them be successful with the operations they have in Europe and in Ireland. And then on the other side is to work with new companies that are exploring how to internationalize and how to go to Europe and how to be successful. And we're there to work with them. So I suppose to dig into, you know, our organization itself, you know, we're split across technology, consumer, business services, international financial services, biopharmaceutical and food, medical technologies and engineering as well. My specific team within IDA focuses on emerging growth companies. So these tend to be Series B companies who've raised kind of $20 to $50 million. They might have a few people dotted around the world, but it's really their first step internationally and they've proven their business model in the US. A lot of them are in recent times SaaS companies or generally technology companies. And, you know, Ireland has been tremendously successful at attracting those type of companies over a very long period of time. And we continue to, even just this morning, we had a company announced in Cork called Tigera, who are a security Kubernetes open source company. They've announced 35 roles in Cork and are really exactly in that sweet spot of what our team work with. Now, we work with companies who are earlier too, but this is what I'd consider the sweet spot of when international makes the most sense for your business.
And why do US, you know, West Coast companies, as you've cited there, need to expand globally? I mean, do they not have everything they need in the US itself?
Yeah, I suppose, look, that's a classic old question. Me, myself, I worked with an Irish company when I came out of university. And I actually went over to Canada to open our Canadian office. And it's the very same thing for this company. It was about, you know, driving new revenue, serving a new market, being able to localize into that market, make sure people have what they need, you know, your customers are being supported in the right time zone. So it's a lot more multifaceted as well than just, you know, can we do it all from our base in California? You can test markets from here, and that's a good thing to do early on before you commit to markets. You know, have spin up a couple of sales folks and support folks, run 24 hours if you need to, depending on your business model, and try and do that from here. But at some stage, you know, when your business is humming in the US, it's time to grow revenue. And actually, you know, it can be a mistake not to go after new markets, because you might end up with copycat companies forming in those other international markets and then becoming competitors to you. So it's very important for some types of businesses, speed to market as well, to take advantage and scale your business from EMEA. You tend to find companies have about 30% of their international revenue. And this is kind of your bigger tech companies, as they start to scale up past Series C and D, will hopefully be deriving about 30% of revenue from EMEA.
Okay.
So it's a substantial market, 500 million people, you know, it needs to be served.
And I suppose I was going to ask, why is Europe a draw? But it seems like it's the next logical step. It's the next big revenue driver outside of North America would be that European market. And having that local presence on a time zone kind of makes more sense
to
have that kind of serviced locally. What are some of the pain points that, you know, Silicon Valley is going through, I suppose, as they manage through this process?
Yeah, I might go back to that last one just on the draw. I'd say there's a pull and a draw. There's two factors to think about, right? So, you know, the draw is the revenue opportunity and things like that. The pull for some of these SaaS companies can be, you know, their customers, because companies are effectively from day one nearly global today. Once you turn on your servers, if they're accessible outside the United States, you can all of a sudden have people trying to buy from you. But very quickly, if there's any sort of real numbers there, they want to be able to do local currency. You need your VAT figured out. You gotta be able to, at some stage, start working in their languages as well. You can obviously start with English first, but all of a sudden, day one, you need these things figured out. And all of a sudden, then you have to deal with data privacy. You know, you've got different things to consider from how you're structured into Europe and things like that to get that right. So it's very important to kind of think about those two, either pull or draw factors. And we see both within the work we do with companies on a day-to-day basis. You know, and companies will call us or in a meeting, they'll bring up some of the different pain points that have kind of drawn them into the conversation with us. Obviously, we do a lot of outbound, we're tracking companies and things like that. But sometimes they come to us through partners or directly because they've ended up with these issues in Europe. And we're there to help them fix them.
Okay. I noticed you mentioned some interesting ones there. I've been a part of my career in terms of language and VAT. We had a whole podcast episode on VAT, value-added tax. Don't know why it's called value-added. I'm not sure the value it brings, but there you go. They're different throughout European jurisdictions. Obviously, currency varies across European jurisdictions. Just because you're in the EU doesn't mean you use the euro, for example.
Exactly.
Or different laws around there. So tell me, like, why does Ireland win in this context? We have a track record, as we all know, of the Googles, the Facebooks, the LinkedIns, the HubSpots, the Salesforce, the Microsofts. The list goes on. Why does Ireland win?
Yeah, it's an interesting one. And, you know, I'll go back to the track record is a crucial piece. You know, us as an organization, I mentioned we've had offices here for 40 years. There's people that I meet in companies that will mention, you know, say Declan Collins, who worked with IDA back here in the 80s, you know, and that, you know, we're talking 40, 50 years of history here of business history that's live. And, you know, obviously the Irish history with America is much deeper than that, going back hundreds of years. But if we're being honest with ourselves, it's really since kind of Ireland started looking outwards in the 70s and 80s and onwards that we started to build traction. And really from the 90s on, that track record of success of companies using Ireland as an international base, the sophistication of sites in Ireland now, it's not just, you know, what it might have been in years gone by of call centers. There's serious international business being done from Ireland, engineering capabilities there. You know, it's a diverse population. 17% of our population is non-Irish born. And that's hugely important to companies because you can't be a global company and not have a global team, right? And this is crucially important. And that's one thing you find in places like Silicon Valley, global teams, people, you know, this diverse teams who have an understanding of the world. And that's what you find in Ireland as well. And I would say we're one of only a very few places in Europe where you would find that concentration of diversity and senior experience who would have run these plays before and been successful doing it.
Okay, that makes a lot of sense. You mentioned there about a long history of IDA in San Francisco or in the US in general. And we obviously have a long history with the US. I think there are some 45 million Irish Americans,
a
population of some 330 million. Maybe just share with me a little bit about that history, if you would.
Yeah, it's an interesting one. Look, I think the numbers, I don't have the exact ones, but it's about 30 million. It's close to 10%. And it's kind of decreasing over time because of the influx that would have come around the famine times. And as generations go on, people just become more American, right? But that history is hugely important. It runs through American culture. When I still, I think, have held on to my Irish accent, even though I've been out of the country since 2012.
I wouldn't have.
You know, people still, when I open my mouth, go, "Oh, you're Irish," and I'm Irish too. And you know, that affinity is hugely valuable, and it's a warm, friendly, you know, welcoming kind of connection that we've had, a deep, long connection as well, that's ingrained into American society. The president himself would consider himself, you know, part of that Irish diaspora, and Irish ancestry is so important as well. So it runs through everything. I think what's important in the business context is to remember that it's not just people with the Irish kind of direct link connection. The people, the senior executives at companies who've got this connection to Ireland because they've had this warm experience of teams there, or, you know, they work with executives from there. That's what's really important, that continued kind of connection to everyone who knows what Ireland is and what the modern Irish brand is very important as well from business context.
As you mentioned, the current president under the Biden administration, any kind of thoughts on how the relationship will fare under that and what the future holds?
Yeah, it's an interesting one. Like, look, I think we stay out of US politics by and large. We're here to do business, and that's the same as the people we deal with. But, you know, I think it's fair to say he has a very strong affinity with Ireland. This place is like, you know, climate and trade and other areas where I think we're going to align very well. And hopefully it'll be good for Ireland overall. I think our position within Europe has shifted as a result of Brexit. You know, it's going to be important for us to work with our European partners on pro-business policies on a continued basis. It needs to be easy for people to start businesses, to scale businesses, and, you know, to innovate and invest in engineering and all those good things. And I think Ireland needs to stay focused on that to make sure we're competitive, and we need to make sure that we have a strong message within Europe along those lines as well.
Okay. No, a very valuable point. I mean, I think that's very much the case, as we are the only now remaining European Union member that has English as a primary language. You might argue, you know, maybe Malta or some such, but yeah, for sure.
Well, look, I think it's more that it's not just the language piece. The cultural, you know, I've heard executives, US executives, referring to it as people who they've worked with in Irish teams, or, you know, and when I say Irish teams, these are, you know, global teams that are in Ireland. These people are from all around the world, including Ireland. And they will say that, you know, there's kind of, they've been trained in the American MBA, if you will. So they understand the kind of the nuances of being able to work in fast scaling US companies, and what those kind of commitments are and everything else, and processes look like. So that's very important as well.
I can't attest to that more so, I mean, than anyone, because I have the good fortune of having grown up in American multinationals. I worked for Dell, Quest, and HubSpot, all American founded.
All great companies as well.
Really rigid training programs. Yeah. Absolutely great product market fit. Very professional in the way that you approach things, and there's a process for everything. I think, you know, there's a great benefit for anybody who wants to join those organizations to have a career in tech. I think that there's a great lesson to be learned there as well. I had a podcast recording only just today as well, where we were talking about the lack of awareness in Europe about the benefit of joining a PE or VC back funded organization. We worked with a lot of those funds ourselves, where I guess the concept of, you mentioned there, that sweet spot of Series B between $20 and $50 million, of joining that organization and the value that that brings to you from a very personal perspective. So I had the good fortune of going through an IPO as well. and it adds considerable value to your learning curve for sure. But also, you know, financially, it's very, very beneficial to have that. And I think Silicon Valley has kind of bred this culture of, you know, well, I've done 3 and 4 of these kinds of.
You meet these serial entrepreneurs everywhere and they're incredibly valuable. And I would say also we see serial investors in Ireland, right? So we you know, build our networks out here and we stay really close to people who've had prior successes with Ireland and have a very warm Irish feeling because they'll do it again, you know? And it's that those people are literally so important to us and valuable to the Irish economy as well.
Exactly. Well, let's jump into that. I mean, what benefits do US companies, large and small, bring to Ireland when they land?
Look, it's multifaceted, right? The hard numbers, there's 260,000 people employed in international companies, IDA client companies in Ireland. So, you know, and if you look at the knock-on effect of that, it's probably a quarter of our employment base is linked to these international companies. And a huge amount of our you know, revenue into the government is also linked to that as well. So it's not just that side. What it also brings is the transfer of knowledge, ideas, and transfer in both directions, right? So, you know, people who work in these companies for a couple of years end up going on and starting successful companies that are working with our partners in Enterprise Ireland and vice versa. The talent moves in both directions, right? And we've seen really successful examples of US companies acquiring Irish companies and then growing them. You know, companies like Genesis in Galway as an example, a call center technology company that's doing really well out there. But I suppose that transfer of ideas is so important. You don't get that if the companies aren't coming, right? So, you know, if you think about a country elsewhere in the world that hasn't been as fortunate as Ireland to end up in this position as a trading hub, you just don't get that employment base. You don't get the opportunities. You can do a bit of, you know, you can do some local economy stuff, but you need to become a central point, which we've managed to do and we want to maintain for these companies coming through. And the benefit obviously is in the employment. Look, I've lots of friends back in Ireland who work in some of the companies we've mentioned and plenty of others. And, you know, that those opportunities are there. I suppose our focus as well is to not only win it for Ireland, but then when we get them to Ireland, we want to make sure we're promoting our regional advantages as well. So great hubs in places like Galway and Cork and Sligo, Waterford, throughout the entire country into Dundalk. You know, I worked with Trust Labs. We just had an announcement of them setting up there. Then in Shannon, we had Renovo Technologies, an exciting kind of data company in the automotive space. These are really high value jobs. You know, this isn't just, they're engineering jobs, they're sticky, they're going to stay, and they're going to create more opportunity in so many facets of the Irish economy over a long-term basis.
I think it's like, it's an ecosystem that's almost self-perpetuating is kind of what I'm hearing there. I know the IDA are very big in trips and doing engagements where you go and do site visits and so on. And I know that was part of my experience. You know, HubSpot was a kind of a showpiece in terms of that. So I'm just wondering, how have you been able to cope with that during the pandemic?
Yeah, it was interesting. I suppose the first few months of the pandemic was like everyone, there was a bit of what's going on here. And I must say our organization was very good in how they reacted to us as staff. Obviously, we're overseas in different places where different things were happening at different times. But I think from our business point of view, the focus then very much turned to, okay, how do we continue to deliver value to companies? How do we continue to get them to set up in Ireland successfully, hire people and scale up? And look, that's happened through the pandemic. And on a really, as you've seen by the announcements over recent times, like I think one of the examples, like Diligent Technologies have hired 70 or 100 people, you know, through the pandemic, starting from scratch. So they were able to get their entity set up and everything else. You know, I've certainly seen it with even Tigera this morning, being able to set up fully remotely. And I think Ireland as well did a good job on that. There was some creaks and things we needed to figure out, but very quickly we were able to make sure that, you know, the company registrations can happen, all the tax registrations. We're pretty good shape on a lot of that stuff. Banking and everything else worked, and really being able to get employees operational in a remote environment was working very well. And we focused in on effectively just moving those in-person visits to, you know, online meetings like we're having here, or Zoom meetings, where we're bring on senior leaders from tech companies in Ireland who have the experience that these companies in the US are looking to lean on and learn from, and also bringing on the service providers and things like that. And it's really worked very well. We, you know, this I think they're here to stay as well, because the speed to market is all of a sudden reduced. So, and this is for the type of companies I'm dealing with, these high growth tech companies that are very used to online environments, and the fact that they don't need to get on a plane, plan a trip, you know, the time over and back and everything else, they can do it within a couple of weeks now, and it's been really successful.
So as we move into this new world, what are your kind of predictions, and how will US companies take advantage of this new work from home mantra, maybe?
Yeah, I think, look, there's everyone's working from home and it's working. As time has gone on, there's a lot of people who want to get back to the human interactions, and we want to see that. We were promoting work from home in Ireland for quite some time. Companies like Amazon, Shopify have pretty scaled teams working from home. Wayfair is another example on the West Coast. And look, it has lots of benefits. It's also very beneficial from a regional spread point of view, and an opportunity in regional locations as well, that are you know, people can work and be engaged in really high quality roles throughout the country. I suppose also important to point out that Ireland, compared to some other locations, our infrastructure held up really well. You know, obviously we need to keep getting the broadband plan rolled out and things like that. They're so important to Ireland's offering, but it did overall held up very well, and that is crucial. You know, I think as we start to think about the nuances of it, from a US perspective, companies have grappled with some minor issues as people have moved to other states, and they have to think about their individual tax treatment and things like that for the employees. Ireland is a member of the European Union. We're one of 27 countries in there, but they're very different jurisdictions. So they all have very different tax systems, very different employment laws. You know, you need to be careful, particularly on the early side. I think it might be a different story if you're a big organization and you have the HR teams and the teams in place to work on this. But for the companies I'm dealing with, on the early side, don't make your life too complicated. There's 116 countries within EMEA. So you could end up with 116 different tax returns to do, and, you know, whatever it might be, for all these different employees and benefits and everything else you have to think about. When you're scaling into Europe, find a location where you can get, you're not looking for big numbers of teams. Like the company Tigera today, they're talking about 35 people over the next, you know, I think 2 or 3 years, whatever the number is. And, you know, if that's successful or they start growing faster, the numbers might be a lot bigger. But on the early side, you're looking at a core team who knows how to serve these markets. I would say try to keep them within one jurisdiction in Europe. We're obviously very pro the Irish jurisdiction because we have business-friendly policies. It's efficient to get set up. And most importantly, the talents there who've run these plays before and can do it for you, you know?
And what is your kind of prediction or analysis thus far, as it were, in terms of that talent piece? Because I know that's something you guys talk about quite a bit, is that track record, but also you've got that access to that talent pool. I mean, where do you see that going forward, and what are some of the advantages US companies can take hold of when they're in Ireland?
I think the talent piece is crucial. You know, it's you need to think about, first of all, you know, there's a few factors. We obviously, as a country that's very attractive and welcoming to international talent, we've have people from all around Europe living and working in Ireland. I think that's going to continue. You know, obviously we have issues at the moment with restrictions and things like that. Once the vaccine levels get up and the world gets back to normal, you know, that talent will start flowing again. Ireland's a very attractive place, and we need to maintain that. We need to maintain our attractiveness to people from outside the European Union as well, and our immigration system supports that. And that's very attractive to US companies. They're looking to serve global markets. They need diverse teams, and it's crucially important. You know, like, we emigrated for 100, you know, the old argument, we emigrated for hundreds of years. You know, my own grandfather emigrated to the US and fought in World War II. And, you know, so I'm a US citizen as well. So we have long, long connections of emigrating. We need to be that warm, welcoming place for global talent as well, and continue to be as we have been. It's so important.
Yeah, I couldn't agree with you more. And I think the affinity with the US definitely helps there. We've got historical benefits, and then we've got that kind of track record piece and access to talent and market within the EU as that kind of leader in the Western fringe of Europe. So I suppose if I could jump into crystal ball time for a moment here and get your take on what are some of the big tech advantages? I mean, you're right in the nexus point of technology and advances therein. What should we be watching out for, and what are you seeing as the next bigger things, or you know handful of big things that are developing?
Yeah, and you need to be careful with some of this stuff, because there can be hype cycles that come and go, right? But look, I think if we look at where we are right now, we've been talking about the cloud for years, and it's arrived and continuing to arrive at speed into every facet of the economy. You know, at scale, cloud infrastructure is in place globally and continuing to expand, and it's getting into every part of business, you know, not just the tech companies utilizing it now, it's into your standard SMEs, into all sorts of parts of the economy. So I think we're going to still see that cloud adoption continue to drive. The AI elements are only starting there. So kind of AI and ML moving in there. And then the promise of quantum, or the potential of quantum starting to be real in the next few years. We're going to be at a whole next level of tech driving forward, I think, from that point of view. If we think about some other areas, like, you know, obviously we've seen kind of the phone kind of, and all the ecosystem that has come out of, you know, advanced phones at this point. I think we're going to see that similar thing happening with the car and the cab sector as well, where there's going to be a lot of new businesses started around that then start to serve that, and new business models that then sit on top of that as well. You know, the obvious stuff is, you know, self-driving cars and some of that, but there's going to be a lot more to it as well that starts to get really interesting. You know, from the other points, it's going to be industrial automation and very advanced factories and all those type areas. But if you look at the level of investment flowing into the companies, into tech companies in particular, it's the highest it's ever been. And the mega rounds are huge, with some weird things going on with SPACs and companies going public. But there's all these different elements. And I think there's key structural elements like climate change or climate action, if you want to call it more appropriately, that's going to have some really big impacts as well on the technologies we see and the companies we see coming out as well.
Exciting, for sure, no doubt about it whatsoever. Well, look, I really want to thank you for taking the time to explain what the IDA do, how they help US multinationals expand into Ireland, but ultimately EMEA and globally, quite frankly. And you've given us some great insights into what's to come as well. And I look forward to welcoming you back on the show in the future.
No, I appreciate that, Ross. And to anyone listening, look, we have a network of offices globally. We work with companies every day and really see the people we work with, see us as trusted advisors, helping them at different points when international is a priority for them and they need to figure out how and when and how to be successful in the European and EMEA market. So we would be happy to talk at any stage.
I strongly advise anyone considering that, who's on the cusp of that internationalization piece, that kind of critical mass, if you will, from a funding perspective, maybe some VCs or PEs are mandating that kind of growth, to get in touch and reach out to really understand some of the supports that are available to make this transition. And, you know, I think ultimately speak to folks who've been there and done that, and you know, they've written the playbook on it, so to speak, and can, exactly, can steward you in that direction to make it happen and realize your pure, you know, your full market potential, as it were.
Yeah, that's it. Thank you very much, Ross.
Appreciate My pleasure. That. Cheers, Alan. Thanks for sharing. Thanks. Talk to you again soon.
Bye now.
You've been listening to the Global Tech Leaders Podcast, designed for both established and aspiring career-focused tech rock stars, as well as helping leadership figure out how to speak global in today's multicultural world. For further details, check out sf-talent.com.